Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Episode 1716 of Radio Free Redoubt. This is the John Jacob Schmidt Show. I'm John Jacob Schmidt, your host. And I want to thank all of you God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots for tuning in for this special presentation. This was pre-recorded as you're listening to this right now. I'm just wrapping up a presentation in Woodbridge, Virginia, meeting some Ameron Core operators and talking to patriots about some of the challenges that we have, that we are facing today. And of course, working with some Ameron Core operators who are working diligently to bring their skill levels and our capabilities up to a level that will best serve Americanism. We are in very trying times. And in our country, we are faced with, well, an assault on everything that we care about. We have ISIS killing people across Europe, and they're trying to spread that here. If you listened yesterday, there is a Islamic-inspired, well, Muslim-inspired to at least threaten to carry out jihad. With the interview with Pastor Shram Hadi, and if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, I strongly encourage you to go back and listen to that. This is not just a European or American issue, Christians facing an assault on the Christian West, patriots, conservatives. We've got a special guest coming up here from Sidelaunders, and what we're potentially facing in our country down the road one day, 5 years, 10 years from now, is on the doorstep of these conservative Christians in South Africa. So they are in the American Redoubt. I will be meeting with them and learning more about their situation. They are here in the United States, two of them, and they are trying to raise awareness and they're pleading for help. There's much needed logistical support items that they need. Very organized. You're going to hear from them right now. So sit back and enjoy and learn. We're going to have the links to their website where you can go and learn more about what they're facing and what they will be facing in the future as things continue to deteriorate on a social level and political level over in South Africa. Some lessons learned from some South African redoubters here in the American Redoubt and Christians who might have to flee to a safe haven, a redoubt of their own somewhere in the country in the future. So with that, turn this over to this interview with Simon Roach. Okay, in this special presentation, I want to bring something up, and we got a special guest with us tonight that I mentioned several weeks ago. A organization that I pronounced Sidelaunders, it's Sidelaunders, and we have one of the organizers who's in the United States right now, Simon Roach, and we're talking about a concerted effort of like-minded Christian conservative patriots, but they're not in America, they're from South Africa, and they face persecution and many would agree, an imminent civil war, very much ethnically driven against the white minorities. And this group of Christians have a plan, a comprehensive plan, very heavy emphasis on logistics. And they have – what makes this so appropriate is that this is very much in line with what we are preparing for with the American Redoubt. And they have a redoubt in South Africa that they are building right now. And while theirs is ethnically driven and ours is not so much ethnically driven, we are more ideologically divided in our country. And these are like-minded Christians of all ethnic groups gathering in the American Redoubt because of the coming Christian persecution and their conservative values to strengthen this area. Now, when I say on the show, you guys be encouraged, you are not alone. Well, this is just another example of really, truly, you not being alone. There are not only other people across America that see what's coming in the future as far as persecution and oppression, not just in America, but around the world. We place a lot of heavy emphasis here, and we talk a lot about the underground church and the persecuted church, a group of people you've probably not heard much about. And those are those Christians in South Africa. So, Simon Roach, thank you so much for being with us on Radio Free Redoubt.
Thank you very much for having us, John.
Would you agree that there's some very profound similarities between the American Redoubt and what you are doing with this movement, the Sidelanders in South Africa? And what do you think some of the similarities are, and what do you think some of the differences are?
John, I would agree that there are profound similarities. We're in Seattle at the moment. We've just arrived a day or so ago, and we're here partly because we are very, very anxious to make contact with people in the Redoubt, and we'll be here for 2 weeks, and we're looking forward to making those contacts. And I think that answers your question in a certain way. We see massive similarities. I would say that the first similarity is the Christian conservatism. We are a white organization by virtue of the fact that that is the specific provision for civil defense organizations in armed conflict in the international law, namely Protocols 1 and 2, additional to the Geneva Conventions. We are not haters. That's simply not who we are. We are no different than, let's say, there was some certain civil war in the USA and Jewish people sought the protection of the international laws, and they gathered together in a certain place. They, by excluding Bulgarians or French or Basque people, would not be doing so in the spirit of hatred. They would be doing so in the spirit that their particular ethnic group was specifically vulnerable in an armed conflict, and they wished to withdraw from that conflict, which is our goal, is to withdraw from the conflict and to become what's known under international law as a non-party to a conflict. Now, obviously, if somebody encroaches on your space that you've declared under international law, then you would defend it. But the purpose is not to be in conflict. The purpose is the very opposite. So we're an organization that is a civil defense organization, the largest civil defense organization that is non-state, a non-state civil defense organization, the largest in the world. And by implication, we are the largest prepper group in the world by very, very far. A conservative, Christian, ethnic group preparing to protect itself in the event of a civil war, which is, as you say, being threatened explicitly at present.
Now, this might make a lot of people perk up when they hear this is a white organization. And in the Western culture, this is very... This runs counter to everything that people are being beat over the head with. But what we're talking about here is a ethnic group that has been specifically, even at the institutional level, specifically targeted for unjust actions, for criminal action, for unlawfulness, and for persecution and oppression. This is no – and I want to make something clear right here. During the Darfur situation, that was something that just ripped at my heart, because there were black Muslims in Sudan who were being raped and butchered by Arabic Muslims because the black Muslims did not deserve to live because they were an impure race. And that is unjust. It's unlawful. It's atrocious. And I advocated strongly for black Muslims who were being slaughtered and oppressed specifically because of their ethnicity. So it is wrong in any form, including if it happens to be targeted toward whites, which are less than 10% in South Africa. And I remember seeing a quote, and I read this quote. One of the MPs, I believe a minister of parliament, stated that if you see a white-owned land, a farm, and you find it beautiful, take it because it belongs to you.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And I can't believe what I'm hearing. The more I learn about this, the oppression that we speak out against because of, you know, ethnically driven persecution against people, we have to advocate on all who are oppressed, even if they're white. And in this case, that's the situation you folks are faced with. The more I learn about this, it's becoming evident.
Yes, yes. We are fundamentally a Christian conservative organization, and fundamentally we are white by virtue of the international laws. That is what the international laws were designed to do. They were designed after World War II to provide protection for civilians in armed conflict, to govern how laws wars are fought. And the Protocols Additional, which came 28 years later, were intended to close the loopholes that the international community had observed in the Geneva Conventions, which were ratified in 1949. So along come the Protocols Additional, as they are called, Protocols Additional 1, 2, and 3, of which only 1 and 2 refer to us. And they closed those loopholes by making specific provisions for whether it be Jews or Romani gypsies or Basques or Celts or any group that is being targeted may gather together as an identifiable group and say, we do not wish to be targeted. We do not wish to be on the receiving end. So it is a prickly subject the moment that you say white, but I assure you that when they drafted those conventions in 1949 and the subsequent protocols, nobody had in mind that it would be white people. You know, they were intended to protect mostly minorities.
Sure.
Now, of course, things change over time, and so it happens to be white people who are taking refuge in that law, because we are specifically targeted. As you probably know, on the 7th of November of last year, one of our most senior political leaders said to a gathering of his people, about 2,000 of them, in the town of Newcastle in the KwaZulu-Natal province, I am not calling for the slaughter of all whites yet. And as a very, very senior black traditional leader, whom I know very well, said to me, Simon, in your culture, that could mean many things. But let me tell you that in my culture, that means one thing. It means that I am going to call upon you, my supporters, to slaughter these people. Get ready to do so. Don't start yet. And this is the same. I'm not talking now about the traditional leader, that the man who made these utterances is the same person who said that by the 3rd of August of this year, all white-owned land must be restored to black people, and whites will henceforth be treated strictly as visitors and guests in South Africa, and that they should learn to behave themselves as visitors and guests, otherwise they will be put in their places.
Mm.
And there are many other examples. The former head of Chief Justice said that we are standing on the cusp of a racial civil war. The surviving brother of our former president, Thabo Mbeki, said that a race war in South Africa is imminent. Our president has said, he said so on the 6th of January 2015. He said that all of South Africa's problems can be traced back to whites. And the same, very senior, I can't mention his name under any circumstances, extremely senior black traditional leader said to me, you know what that means, Simon? In our culture, that means that if we get rid of the whites, we won't have a problem anymore. He said, you can believe me or not as you like, but that's the idiom in our culture. That's how senior leaders speak, and their followers are meant to react. So apologies for the sort of long-winded answer, John, but I hope I've covered that sensitive topic.
No, that really helps. I've looked over your site in depth. I've spurned off all these rabbit trails to dig deeper into this. It is a different world that most people in the West cannot comprehend. It's a completely different reality. And this takes a whole paradigm shift in your thinking to grasp what's happening there, and to come to terms with it. What comes to mind is Rwanda. When I see what's coming. And so right now you are essentially appealing to international law to intervene on behalf of an ethnic minority that is being oppressed. But you are also prepared to protect, and you're prepared for that system to fail where you have to go on your own. Would that be a correct assessment?
That would be 100% correct. I almost interrupted you there, but you said what I would have liked to have added to your first portion. So you are 100% on the money.
Okay, so let's talk about this. What my vision for the American Redoubt has always been to strengthen. It is already conservative, and the conservatives, patriots, are in the majority here. But we know that we're under attack. They have to advance progressive statism, government supremacy, global world system everywhere. So the whole point is to strengthen this area, to repel that. And then if our societal, political, or economic system collapses, or all of those collapse, and there is a rebuilding, we want to have a say on what type of new culture we might have based on those demographics in the area. So the AMRON Radio Emergency Communications Network was a way for like-minded conservative patriots to be able to coordinate, communicate with each other, and share information and aid those who are trying to make their way here. But
yes,
with the American Redoubt, we're already here. I mean, and people are gathering here. Proactively relocating now, or are you just staying in place and living your life, and then if things go down, then you will redoubt to a safe place?
One of the fundamental tenets of our operational approach is taken from Nicholas Nassim Taleb's concept of anti-fragility. So our approach to a redoubt is inherently beyond the word flexible. So no, we are not at all. Our fundamental philosophy is completely opposed to that. We know where we will go and how we will get there and why we will do it that way and who will do it and so on. But we are not building any sort of permanent presence in any region of South Africa, because it would make us vulnerable to there is a black African proverb about killing the snake at the head, and it's a very common proverb. That's the only reason I mention it, and of course we don't want our snake to be killed at the head, as it were. We have to be anti-fragile, as Nicholas Nassim Taleb conceived the idea.
That makes sense. You're in a different situation. I mean, we're facing, similarly, developing a plan to respond when oppression comes. But our circumstances are a little bit different. Where would you go?
Oh, yes.
Or can you say?
No, I can't say. They're just a handful of people who are familiar with that.
Okay. All right. So I didn't know if that's because I don't know what
Please don't be shy to ask any question. If I can't answer it, John, I'll say so. Please don't be put off.
Well, you're talking to somebody and an audience that completely understands a term we call OPSEC and PERSEC. So Operation Security, we get that and we preach it. So I completely understand. So you have let's talk about the network then. And what lessons can we learn from you when a group of people are displaced and have to relocate? What all does that entail when you are in your advanced planning stages or pre-planning stages? What are some of the primary things that you've had to consider that maybe conservative Christian patriots in America can learn from?
Well, there are numerous things. I'll just mention a handful, and you're welcome to interrogate any of them or to ask for more. But demographics is key. Terrain is equally key. Routes, accessibility, the safety of those routes, and also way stations are, I'd say, four or five of the most important pillars of our plan.
That's, you know, that's a difficult thing in America, even among the patriots, because for someone to volunteer, let's say their station, you guys are all banding together. This is causing unity among the remnant over there that sees this persecution coming. And so there's a sense of unity among the body. What I hate this word collective, but collectively, everybody's sees what's coming and they're on mission together. And so they will work together. Like, I will offer my place as a way station for families to come. We can hold up. We'll have security. We'll have food stored here, fuel. We can circle the wagons and work together on this. In America, it's pretty much, just me and my family. I don't trust anyone else. I'm not going to link up with other people. And that's a difficult thing to overcome.
Yes. It's interesting you should say that, because our organization is fundamentally an Afrikaner Boer organization. So the Afrikaners or the Boers are the descendants of the Dutch, the quasi-Dutch speaking descendants of the Calvinists, Lutherans, and Huguenots, and they were specifically religious groups as opposed to ethnic groups. I can explain that to you if you like. The Calvinists, Lutherans, and Huguenots who came to South Africa from 1652. And the Afrikaner Boers are famously divisive, famously, until they have to stand together. Then they stand together more than in unison. They stand together as kind of a literal one. So it's not a problem that's unique to you guys. But as we spoke before the interview, John, you know, we can learn a lot from American preparations and anybody who is a survivalist or a prepper and who goes onto those sorts of websites will quickly soon see that Americans generally are leagues ahead of all of the other preppers in the world when it comes to personal preparations. You guys really do that fantastically. But where we are far, far stronger is in what you're referring to, looking beyond my family. And we have the benefit of being such a tiny minority that we don't have a choice. We're only 8 or 9%, between 8 and 9% of the total South African population. So in the event of a race-based civil war, should what our politicians have been either advocating or forecasting, should that come to pass, we don't stand any chance. Therefore, we have to think differently. Divisiveness just doesn't enter into the equation. You know, it's quite different in that sense.
Yeah. Well, I would love to bottle that up and just pour it over the patriots in America. And I have to say, though, the listening audience in Radio Free Redoubt and the members, the radio operators among AMRON, I've been so impressed with how strong the bonds and relationships have built, and the network strengthens and personal friendships and relationships come out of this, and is really becoming stronger all the time. And there is a sense of unity there where they feel like they're on mission together and they count on each other, and they teach and mentor each other, and have grown. And it's been an amazing thing from my vantage point to watch happen. But
yes,
it's one small fraction of the whole patriot community, if you will. Many preppers, yes, aren't really patriots, and many patriots are not self-reliant. They couldn't last more than a week if, you know, the supply line stopped. So we're trying to get some bleed over there. And for me, this is what I love about what you're doing, is that most of the preppers in America are stuck on preparing to survive an event. And that's it. They're not looking beyond the event to rebuilding, the strategic side of this, where something will emerge on the other side of this. You're not prepping so that you can just eat when everyone's starving. You're prepping so that you can survive this event and come out the other side and contribute to building what's, you know, comes out the other side of that.
Well, so, I'm not the expert, so far be it from me to contradict you, but I have an instinctive feeling that you guys will take that bull by the horns when the time is right.
Because
Americans have a proud tradition of building, of making, of creating, of industriousness, productivity, and constructiveness.
Yeah.
I'm sure that you guys will be able to rebuild. I think that that'll be the least of your worries if your pedigree is anything to go by, John.
Well, thank you. That's encouraging to hear from an outside perspective. I pray that is true, and that comes to fruition, no doubt. Okay, we're going to take a short break here. I am with Simon from Sidlanders, or Sidlanders, rather. It looks like Suidlanders, but it's not. We're learning it. And our friends, our fellow brothers in South Africa who are facing persecution and an imminent civil war, we want to learn from each other and hopefully encourage one another. And hopefully you guys are getting some out of this. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt. We'll be back in a minute. In a moment. Don't go away.
You're listening to a special presentation featuring John Jacob Schmidt, brought to you exclusively by Radio Free Readout.
All right, thank you guys for listening to the Voice of the American Redoubt, the voice of resistance against everything that sets itself against our heritage, our values, and everything that we cherish. We are joined by a special guest, Simon Roach from Sidlanders. And this is a project of Christians in South Africa who are facing persecution and what many are saying, an imminent civil war. And they have a comprehensive plan with logistics and communications and networking available or being built right now, and they've been working on this for a long time. So thank you, Simon, for being with us here.
Again, it's a privilege, John, for those of your listeners who know about what is happening in South Africa, the sheer statistics of murder and rape and the threats and whatever else, will perhaps appreciate it when I tell you from my heart that there is an entire people that thanks you for this opportunity today.
Well, it is an honor anytime we can step up and help to protect or liberate the oppressed, then we will absolutely step into that role. That's what many of us feel called to do. And the first step in that is bringing awareness to the situation. And that brings me to another point that I want to bring up. It's very important. I know we have a lot of pastors. I know we have a lot of associate pastors in this listening audience, and we have a lot of people, listeners in the audience who are personal friends with their pastors or associate pastors. I want to urge you to go to Sidlanders. Let me spell it for you: Suidlanders. ERS.org. We're going to put a posting in our highlights and resources posting for the link to their website. And once you go down that rabbit hole and start learning about what they're facing, I don't see how we as Christians could turn our backs on these people. But Simon is part of a two-man team?
It's a two-man team in the state of Mark.
Okay. Oh, you're broken up. But just to confirm, there's two of them right here in the United States traveling right now. And they're only going to be here for a short while longer, but they're making themselves available to come to your church and talk about Christians facing persecution and maybe some of the things that we can learn from them and maybe ways that we can help them, support them in prayer, support them if you know, financially, sponsoring, helping these. But learning more about their story is key. So I just want to encourage you guys to do that. And I know that I was just speaking with Pastor Hadian, Pastor Sharam Hadian, and he's very anxious to get the contact information, the link and everything that I sent to him to learn more, to make contact with you guys. So let me bring something up, the elephant in the room. I know that a couple of people in the listening audience said, hey, I was excited about these guys at first, but man, it looks like they're affiliating themselves with these white nationalist, racist, neo-Nazi type groups in the United States. They met with David Duke, the ultimate narcissistic racist. And, you should distance yourself from these guys. And then, that's why I backed off. I didn't respond to you for 10 days, I think, maybe more, because I was researching. I wanted to make sure I wasn't stepping my foot into a snare, because that's not something we want to be, associated or affiliated with. But the more I see your responses, but the listening audience needs to hear it from you. How do you respond when people bring those concerns up?
Dear me, John, this is a very, very prickly subject. And, whether you do or whether you don't, you're sort of damned either way. But I can only tell you the truth, which, as I say, whether you do or you don't, you're damned. But I will tell you the truth, and some people will accept it and some will not. For approximately 18 months, we worked on this project of coming to the USA to do a fundraising tour for the purchase of vital necessities for civilian non-combatants in the event of a civil war, to raise money amongst conservatives in the USA and to purchase water filters and diesel pumps and what have you. In that entire period, I said to every single person that I spoke to about this, I want to meet with Christian conservatives because that's who we are. And there are dozens of people who could testify to that. Of course, I can't prove it over the telephone. When we got to the USA, we were introduced to a number of people, and one introduction led to the other, and we met with a certain very high-profile extreme right-winger in the USA. And after the meeting, we agreed that we would have nothing more to do with that person, even though we had been invited onto a show, for want of a better word, a broadcast, a series of broadcasts, retweets and relinks and re-this and re-that, that would have reached over 1.5 million people. You know who I'm talking about, and you know the circumstances, and indeed yesterday when you and I spoke, you told me that you had seen the report that I made of that incident.
Yes.
It's on the internet. I don't want to advertise the people involved because it's not fair on them, but you and some of your people have seen it already. There I expressed very simply, I will have nothing to do with that kind of rabid hatred. It's not who we are.
Right.
Having said that, I would like to make clear that I personally do not regret the good meetings that we have held with some people whose opinions are more right-wing than yours and mine. Now, again, that might sound cheap, but here is the best reference I can give you. I was the project manager of two presidential inaugurations in South Africa. I was also the project manager of the very, very, very famous African National Congress election process. 5,500 people, very big event that saw Jacob Zuma, our current president, elected. And in November of 2008, I was appointed the project manager of the entire Nelson Mandela funeral, 5 years before it happened, in advance of the inevitable event. So it might be difficult for some of your listeners to swallow, but I know that I have nothing to be ashamed of when it comes to the new South Africa, the Rainbow Nation, the endeavors between black and white people to create some kind of harmonious society. I was to maybe use a coarse expression, I was the tame white boy. I was that white guy who the African National Congress knew from having been arrested on their behalves and gotten into lots of trouble and beaten up by the police and what have you on behalf of black people prior to 1994 in the elections. I was that guy. I know that my heart was always set on a good future between the people of our country. The reason why I now belong to an organization that is light years more conservative than the ANC could ever dream of and has a completely different set of values is because I have seen over time that there is an onslaught on our people. So coming to the USA, we reached out to, I told you yesterday, 788. I checked my facts overnight. It's not. It's 782 churches and conservative Christian organizations, of which we telephoned from South Africa about 12, and the balance were email. In the 12 telephone calls, I think we got about 5 negative responses and no responses from the others. In other words, I'll think about it, and never got back to us. Of the balance of the 782, so 770, we got 3 replies, John.
Wow.
Three organizations cared enough to give us a reply, the dignity of a reply. So when we came to the USA, we had no friends apart from Alex Newman at WorldNet Daily and somebody in Southern California and another group in Florida. And those people received us and they helped us as best they could. And then we had to continue. And bit by bit by bit, others reached out to us whose pedigrees I have no way of knowing. Until this day in many cases, unless I spent all day and all night interrogating each and every single one of those people's Facebook profiles and Twitter accounts and I don't know what all, I have no way of knowing who they are. If they approach me and they don't say something rabid and nasty and horrible, then I take them to be a sympathizer, not necessarily a Trotskyite or a Fanonist or a Bolshevik or a Nazi or a fascist or a neo-Nazi or a neo-fascist. And those are the people who reached out to us. Some of them were, you know, very right-wing, but none of them was rapist. None of them, in my opinion, was vicious. You know, no neo-Nazis, no people like that. So, you know, you've sort of scratched a bit of an itch on our part, and we know that we will be tainted by the fact that we met some guy in Michigan whose background we have absolutely no idea about, who is a whatever, I don't know, he's a bit too right-wing for you, or he's a bit too left-wing for me, or he's not in the middle enough for this church or that church, but those are the people who were willing to receive us, and I can state categorically that we have not accepted friendship from anybody who was quite clearly rabid. We had an opportunity to reach more people in one radio interview than all of the people we've reached over the past 8-9 weeks now.
Right.
And we turned it down because it would have been the wrong thing to do.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to give you the opportunity to respond and to say that I have researched it. I have seen your responses online. They were very satisfactory to me. I wouldn't even call that individual right wing. He's just off the rails. I am right wing. I am an extreme right wing. Well, no, I'm not extremist because I'm not an anarchist, but I am very right wing. But anyway, I appreciate you. You know, your honesty with that and responding to that. And I know when I asked you about that yesterday, you sounded like you almost had tears in your eyes. How badly you wanted to reach out to the churches and to the Christian church, the evangelical Christians, and they're just silence, pure silence from them. And that is my frustration, not the listeners in this audience and the churches and the pastors and the people that are listeners here, but across the board, this is a pandemic in America, the apathy of the church or the willful ignorance. They don't want to know. They stick their fingers in the ears and they just la, la, la. Let's talk about how to treat your wife. Let's talk about other things that are warm and fuzzy and not confronting the real challenges that we're faced with, that Christians right now are being faced with, like you guys in South Africa.
Yes, yes. Well, it's a phenomenon that's not unique to America. Obviously, we've been disappointed by it, but it's certainly not unique to the USA. There is an epidemic of political correctness which runs counter to the explicit word of God going throughout the world at the moment. People will do anything to look good in the eyes of the public, and to avoid confronting any inconvenient precepts of the Bible.
Yes, and you know what though? You know where the church is flourishing, where it is truly, where the faith is real. I mean, where it really gets real is where the church is persecuted. So you know that might be. I believe that's what we need to get real again. And that's what you guys are facing right now. It's real for you. So it's not a reality for the people here. It's easy to turn their back on it or to ignore it or even willfully ignore it. They don't want to know about it because it pulls them out of their comfort zone. But we don't have a comfort zone here. We're perpetually uncomfortable.
Well, it's what you say is true, but I must emphasize it's not unique to the USA. We have the same contagion in South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very sad to see pastors turning their backs on the suffering of human beings so that they can maintain a sort of consistent political correctness in the eyes of the people that they believe are their judges. It's heartbreaking.
Now, as far as your preparedness plan, OPSEC is key here. But what do you have each individual family? What's the basic, a new family comes to your group and they say, we are so concerned. Yes. We're so glad we found you. Tell us what to do. Mm-hmm. What are your steps for them, to get started?
Our first step is for people to get connected. In other words, we say to them, it's imperative that you have a water filter and that you have carbohydrates and proteins and this and that and fuel for your vehicle. But more than anything is you must connect with the people around you, connect to the people in the organization so that we can build unity and strength before we start preparing as individuals. That's our first thing. Connect, 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 connect. Go to meetings, go to practices, go and do training, our training, and connect with the people around you. The second step then is to prepare the basics. And we all know, or preppers and survivalists generally know, that the first thing that you think about is fuel or water. Now, we would say that it's fuel long before it's water. Because in the event of a cataclysm, you will not be able to get to water to purify it if you don't have if you're immobile.
Right.
So if you buy a water filter, of course it's absolutely vital. But think of the diesel fuel that or gasoline, but preferably diesel fuel because it's more versatile. Think of the diesel fuel that you can put in your vehicle and which can be used to run a generator. That generator can mill food. It can pump and purify water. It can provide heat, lighting, and so on and so forth ad infinitum. So we look first at diesel fuel.
Okay.
Then we look at food and water and medicine, more or less equally. And then we look at clothing and shelter, and we try to encourage people not to prepare too much, not to over-prepare themselves, because the one of the chief characteristics of our plan entails mobility, or is all about mobility.
Yes.
So don't be the guy who's got an F-150 and an F-250 and an F-350 and three caravans or camper homes, I think you call them, towed behind and whatever else, because you're the guy who's going to be left behind or who's going to be separated from your wife who's driving one of the other vehicles, and your grown-up son who's driving the third vehicle. Rather be light and mobile with your vital necessities. You don't need a pillow to sleep on. You need a sleeping bag.
Yeah.
But a pillow and a duvet and a cover and a comforter and all of these things are not necessary to your survival.
Yeah. Fast, especially speed. The speed combined with mobility it is going to be key, I think, when people are – well, I'm thinking Rwanda here, where they immediately started setting up checkpoints, and they put the word out over PAs, over radios, calling for people to set up hasty ambushes and checkpoints and roadblocks at every intersection to trap people who are trying to escape. And I can see that playing itself out here. This situation in South Africa. So speed and mobility is going to be critical. Even if you could throw on a backpack and get on a dirt bike and haul out of there, you know. But now, do you guys also have a plan, or do you have a pre-positioning set up where people pre-position their supplies to get too quickly, and then they have a year's worth of food supply at a destination.
Yes, there is caching. We do caching, but because our final location is more or less not known, we don't encourage the caching too much, because at some point somebody's going to be able to work out where we're going to. So there are advantages and disadvantages to our approach, but that's our final decision.
Okay.
We're not going to tell people that they should cache on national road number one or number two or three or four, you know, and so on.
Right.
Because eventually our operational security will be lost altogether.
Okay. So when you get to your location, let's say hypothetically, it's 300 miles for most people to get to this place. They've cached a few supplies. They've carried very little so they could stay light and mobile.
Yes.
And then they get there and you've got 2,000 people there with a week's worth of food. Or have you planned, strategic food supplies and other supplies to host these numbers as they arrive at their final destination?
There are two things I'd like to say, John, if I may. The first is that we believe in a series of prophecies given by a deeply, deeply pious man 100, 120, 130 years ago. He never read anything except the Bible, and he couldn't write, and he began to make prophecies. And the Afrikaner Boer culture is a stoic and skeptic culture, fundamentally. And so he was written off at the beginning, but these prophecies came true over and over and over again, and he has a spotless record, incomparable to any modern prophet that you can dream of. And so he established immense credibility amongst his people, particularly during the Second Anglo-Boer War and during World War I, where he prophesied the outcomes of conflicts in which his people were involved. It's spot on. And he said that the people who would make it, our remnant, would be, he used the term which is very difficult to translate into English, so I'll give you the best translation that I can. Just a handful that is both small and little. So we are at a sort of a regrettable peace, if you like, with the idea that the majority of our people will not make it in the catastrophe that is to come. The second thing I wanted to say is that our people do know the locations of the safe havens or waypoints to which you and I alluded earlier. They are not near to our final redoubt. Therefore, they don't give the game away.
Right.
But that is perhaps a note that I should insert after what I said just now, so that people understand a little bit better. So our people know where their first, second, and third stops are, about 300 kilometers, call it 200 and some change miles, but quite far removed from the final location. I hope that I've answered your question.
Yeah. That's. I know it's also complicated because you have to maintain OPSEC as well. But there's the other final thing that I guess I want to cover with you, and I'm sure there will be follow ups in the future because this is something very intriguing for me, and I know many people that are listening right now. Let's talk about the security situation. First of all, what is the private personal firearms owner situation like? The firearms ownership situation. Are you restricted to what types of firearms you can have, and what type of security have you considered as far as teams or training, things like that?
I'll answer the second question first because it might make better sense. We have a proud military history. Anybody who's familiar with the Boer War and the Battle of Blood River and other incidents will know that we arguably have the proudest military tradition of any existing nation in the world today. So there are many, many experienced people who came out of our war. Our border war, in which we fought 9 countries simultaneously, arguably 11 countries, but let's call it 9, which has been vastly underreported. It was a hot war with extensive battles and contacts and what have you. So in that sense, we have a lot of knowledge and skills amongst our people, and we try to pass it on. But we also walk a very rigid tightrope in which we don't cross over into anything that could be described as militaristic or seditionist or insurrectionist at all. We are squeaky clean when it comes to that sort of thing. Our government, the African National Congress, has tried very, very hard to catch us out, and they've never gotten it right, and they've infiltrated us with treacherous people, our own people. So, of course, if we were privately breaking the law, we would have been caught by now. There are no two ways about it. They have devoted literally hundreds of millions of dollars to catching us out, and they've never once got it right. We simply don't break the law.
Oh, so you've
got in our interest to do so.
Oh, so you got your own problem with informants and spies too, like us.
Yes, yeah. Huge.
You hear that? You hear that? You informants out there listening, little weasels trying to hurt good people.
Yes.
You know who you are, you pieces of garbage.
Yes, yes, yes. They've wicked, wicked souls, but that's the way it is, I suppose.
Yeah.
So to answer your first question, our laws were quite relaxed about gun ownership, and then the African National Congress clamped down under the pretext that if they reduced the number of legal firearms, that there would be less crime in the country, which makes absolutely, it's just about the stupidest thing, and how we swallowed it, I will never, ever, ever understand. Nevertheless, they camped down, and now the law is that you can get one sidearm, one shotgun, and one rifle. More or less, I'm going to explain in a second, and then nobody will be able to accuse me of lying or exaggerating. How you do that is that you go for you study, then you go for a competency test, a practical one, and a written examination, and then you submit an application for the licenses to own those firearms, and your application must be accompanied by testimonials saying that you're a good guy and so on. Huh. By specific people, not just anybody. Specific people who are legally permitted to provide you with a testimonial. Now, if you are an Olympic shotist or a big game hunter or a famous collector of firearms, that is then relaxed. You could have many firearms. There's almost no limit, but you have to fall into those categories. Hmm. And you have to be able to provide evidence of falling into those categories. For example, you have to be able to prove that you are a dedicated sports shooter and that you have fired off whatever number of thousands of rounds over the past year, and it's signed off by the local gun range manager, and then you will be considered to for a license to get a, let's say, a second rifle or a third or a fourth or so on. The other thing to mention is that when it comes to rifles, they may not be automatic. So that, and that is an absolute ceiling. Of course, there are some people with automatic rifles under very, very special dispensation, collectors and so on. But
right,
for the average person, it is an absolute ceiling, and you will never, ever obtain a license for a fully automatic firearm.
But you can own combat rifles, like a semi-automatic version of an AK-47 or AR-15, M-16.
No, you can't. Semi-auto.
Semi-auto.
Yes, I beg your pardon. You're correct. Yes, that's correct.
Oh, you can. Okay, good. Good. That's comforting.
Yes, not easily. Let me just be clear on that. That is a very, very difficult thing to get right. And if you get it right, you will never be given a license for a fully automatic one. I can't apply for a semi-automatic rifle. Well, I could, but chances of me getting it are so slender that it's not worth the trouble of even trying. But technically, yes, you are correct.
Hmm. Sounds like California. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I want to thank you very much for your time. Are there any parting shots you want to leave the listeners with? What do you want them to walk away from not having heard?
Well, I'd like to let your listeners know that we are touring the USA to raise funds for civilian vital necessities. And if anybody would like us to give a talk to them, they should contact me, and I'll give my contact details in a second. Or if anybody here in the Redoubt would just like to meet, we would love to meet like-minded people. We are fundamentally a Christian conservative organization. I alluded to prophecies, and there's a whole lot of biblical stuff that I could speak about. And as Christian conservatives, we'd like to meet like-minded people, whether they are able to donate funds or not. It's the first and foremost, this is a mission to spread a word. My contact details are hk@statelanders.co.za, and I'll spell that. It's Hotel Kilo at Sierra Uniform Indigo Delta Lima Alpha November Delta Echo Romeo Sierra .co.za.
ZA. Got it. All right. And we're going to put the website link on our highlights and resources posting as well. And I'll talk to some folks too about maybe possibly getting a banner put up on Radio Free Redoubt, and maybe Amron, definitely on Radio Free Redoubt. So I'll be talking to some people about that so that we can anytime people can just find that link, click on it, and find you folks and learn more about this. And awareness is the biggest thing. And we need people to know about what's going on.
I beg your pardon, John. I just quickly wanted to insert something before you said goodbye. If anybody would like to donate who is not able to meet us in person, they can go onto that link that you're going to put up, which is saplanders.org. It doesn't have the same suffix as my email address. It's saplanders.org.
Good.
And in the bottom right-hand corner of that, the homepage of that website, there is a link for donations.
Okay, perfect. I'm going to it. Oh, there we go. And you take Bitcoin as well. So Bitcoin, PayPal.
Yes.
Outstanding. And that's their website, The Coming Revolution. They've got a lot of information. And it is seriously unspeakable things that are happening to people over there because they're being driven off their land that they've owned for generations. That's something else I meant to say earlier. Somebody was saying, well, if these guys are slowly like less than 10% of them, they're that much hostility aimed at them. Why don't they leave? Why don't they just go home? I told them they are home. This is their home. They didn't just show up here as tourists and decide to stay. They've been there for generations. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, when that was first colonized originally, there were actually whites were the only ones there. Is that correct?
You're very, very close to correct. The only people that the white people found, when the white people arrived in 1652, on the 6th of April, 1652, and for 125 years, they did not encounter any broad-shouldered, black-skinned people in South Africa. The only people they encountered were the residual small families of what are colloquially known as Bushmen and Hottentots. Those are not very respectful names, but the scientific or accurate cultural names are not known to everybody. Those residual small families of people who had been driven out of particularly the Natal, KwaZulu-Natal region by the and Zulu people who murdered them, slaughtered them, every last one possible. And it's a very sensitive subject. Many liberals will be indignant at what I've just said, but the facts are there. And I can quote you chapter and verse the details of that. So from 1652 until 1777, the whites who settled in the Cape of Good Hope did not encounter any one single broad-skinned, black-skinned, as they are known, Bantu people in South Africa. Not until late 1777, early 1778, when a man in the second year of Nelly election found people of the Great Fish River.
Trying to piece that together. It's broken up real badly there for the last about a minute. And I was hoping it would reassemble
and
come through. But, there's so much history there.
I'm sorry.
It's – hold on one moment. Stand by. So
– well, if you would like me to come on again, John, it would be my privilege. It goes without saying. If you you know, want to correct any portions that didn't come out nicely, and if you would like to hear more, we can talk about the origins of South Africa. We can explain in greater detail why it is that we believe that we will be the last nation in history as a nation.
Right.
That is the key. The last nation in history standing as a nation for God Almighty. The last Christian nation standing as a Christian nation for God. And many other things, you know, we can chat, and it's really up to you.
You might be the last one of two last standing Christian nations if we have our way.
Well, Yeah, we wish you all of the very best. We have a very strong opinion that there are people in the USA who are, many of our elders, our very pious elders, believe that the Christians of the USA have a very special, very particular place in God's plan. It's one of our, you could almost say, the tenets of our beliefs.
Yeah.
Is this thing about the Christians in the USA.
Well, maybe the remnant of what used to be a Christian nation. But we're all willing to stand, and we stand with you. So thank you guys for what you're doing, the courage that it takes. It would be easy just to pack up and just leave. Yeah, go somewhere else.
Well, we're not trying to do that. That would be to capitulate to barbarianism.
Yes.
We happen to be those people who are determined to stand and to fight and, if necessary, to die for what is good, for the beautiful country we love so deeply.
Yes.
And for our God, for the good that our forefathers built too.
Yeah. I'm with you, brother. That is just a very amazing thing. So we will definitely stay in touch. Well, I look forward to, I hope, a long, fruitful relationship for years to come.
Thank you very much.
All right, I hope that gave all of you out there in the listening audience plenty to think about. How, when I say you're not alone, there are others just like you that are going through similar challenges. Well, we're really not alone. There's people facing persecution all around the world right now. Anyway, I want you guys to have a blessed week. When you prepare, make sure you don't do it out of fear. Do it out of a sense of responsibility and duty, like an insurance policy. Don't chew your fingernails off worrying about it. It's not going to do any good anyway. So what will do good? Prepare mentally, spiritually, logistically, with your skill sets. Just have good situational awareness. So more coming up. We're going to be following up with those guys. Hope you enjoyed that. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and you've been listening to the Voice of the American Redoubt for a very special presentation, episode 1716. Good night.